You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And you're joined today by myself, Jacob Andwafa, and I'll introduce another co-presenter.
Hi, it's Chloe here. Good morning, Jacob. Good morning, listeners.
Before we announce what we have coming up on the program, I'd like to acknowledge that 3CR is being broadcasted to you from the Wurundjeri land of the Kulin Nation. We like to acknowledge that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land and that sovereignty has never been ceded. 3CR and Green Left in particular, you know, stands up for First Nations sovereignty and supports decolonisation. And we stand in solidarity with all First Nations struggle for land sovereignty and sovereignty. Okay, so just to announce what we have coming up on the program this week, it's been a big week in politics in the past week with all the developments that have been happening in Iran. And in fact, since the US and Israel has led its bombing of Iran, which happened earlier last week, I think around the start of March, it has had huge implications for world politics. And in fact, probably one of the biggest fears that many of us would have is the kind of risk that this has to bring the kind of whole world into war. And in fact, what is really happening is we're seeing this incredible kind of drive to war being pushed by many of the kind of Western kind of capitalist nations. So we're going to be hearing from Abbas Saeed, who is an Iranian leftist who is based in NAR Melbourne. And he'll be giving us a bit of a left-wing Iranian perspective on, you know, what these events kind of mean for the world politics and what is the kind of left response that we should have. Then we'll be covering the issue of public housing, and we'll be talking to Jackson Payne from Stop the Demolitions, and he'll be giving us a bit of an update about the ongoing campaign to oppose the destruction of 44 public housing towers in Melbourne. So probably maybe we'll go start off with a bit of headline kind of news. So probably the story I kind of want to start off with is giving a bit of a report on the protests that have been happening against the new hate speech laws that the Queensland state government has implemented. Now, a bit of background here: we reported on this on a previous program, but in Queensland, it is now essentially under these new hate speech laws, it has essentially banned the phrase that is often heard at a lot of Palestine protests, from the river to the sea. And these arrests occur, and in fact, two pro-Palestine activists have been charged with violating these new hate speech laws, because one of them has allegedly said the banned phrase "from the river to the sea." And probably one of the more disturbing sort of aspects. And so the activist that has been arrested is a Students for Palestine activist, Liam Parry. And These arrests occurred at a small protest march that just happened outside the State Parliament building on Wednesday. In fact, this was probably part of the Students for Palestine National Day of Action that happened on Wednesday, where there were protests led by students all over Australia, including in Melbourne, which the protest in Melbourne was quite sizable, probably had up to 200 to 300 people. Now, to give a bit of background to this act, I mean, under this act, a person can actually be jailed for up to 2 years for saying a banned phrase. And these banned words include, you know, from the river to the sea, globalised intifada, and of course, it's in the context if doing so would cause menace, harassment or offence. Now, the thing is, I mean, obviously, you know, it's hard to define menace and harassment. But offence is kind of like one of those words that, you know, a lot of people can, you know, people can make lots of claims for things being kind of offensive. So I think, you know, this is a very kind of outrageous kind of attack on our freedom of speech. And probably one of the more incredible things I'll just say about it is, at the end of the day, the protest organisers weren't actually encouraging the use of these phrases because it was a small protest, etc. They didn't necessarily want anyone who was sort of attending the protest to be arrested for saying the words under these new laws, but they did think that the protest did feel was important to actually, you know, explain in quite an educational way why saying these words isn't actually offensive, and that, you know, the saying from the river to sea is actually an aspiration for the call for freedom for all Palestinians. And the idea that it has anything to do with anti-Semitism or hatred is, you know, just completely not on the mark. So I think, yeah, the fact that someone can just get arrested for saying the words is quite outrageous. And it does make me wonder, I mean, just for why it makes me wonder about even just saying it on our program. I know it's definitely not illegal in Melbourne to say it, but, you know.
I think they might try to bring it in. Or in New South Wales, they're trying to ban it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. But the point I'm sort of making is, okay, what about for people who are in Queensland listening to this program now? Is it would the state kind of try to attempt to ban it? But I mean, this is where these laws get really messy. I mean, it's all in the context. I mean, it's a bit similar to attempts to consciously ban particular content off the internet based on country, because, you know, people can use VPNs to kind of bypass that, etc.
It's not really that effective, is it? I mean, how can you even enforce something like that? It means you have to go to jail for 2 years for wearing a T-shirt. Because I think someone else was arrested for wearing a T-shirt that said "From the River to the Sea," and lots of pro-Palestine activists and merchandise has that chant on it. We've all used that chant. We continue to use it in the streets. So it's such a dangerous law, which is allowing a very authoritarian approach by the Queensland government. And well, we want to extend solidarity to those protesters. I guess a law doesn't really carry much weight if people don't recognise it and, you know, everyone rebels against it. But, yeah, the actual... it is important to talk about what "from the river to the sea" means, because... And we have printed this in Green Left. Peter Slezak, an associate professor at the University of New South Wales, he was saying that the chant "From the River to the Sea, Palestine will be free," it's rightly saying how it is, he was saying it's condemned by apologists for Israel's crimes as anti-Semitic, calling for the murder of Jews and the annihilation of Israel. And that slogan was also condemned by Albanese as very violent. This is what led to the banning. He was saying it has no place in Australia, and he's never actually condemned Israel's bombing of refugee tents and mosques and hospitals as very violent. But the phrase "from the river to the sea" is used by Israel because Israel officially declared that there will be no Palestinian state from the river to the sea. So the slogan should really be seen as a plea for liberation and justice. Anyway, we don't need to convince our listeners of this, but it's good to talk about this particular chant, because whoever has a problem with this chant has a problem with speaking out against a genocide. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free really means fighting for justice and freedom. And if we want a just peace for all peoples in Palestine, justice, and to be able to honor the victims of the genocide, that is really what that means.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I think this is really something it has to be kind of said, but this is really the outcome of these new kind of hate speech laws that the Albanese government is supporting and implementing. And state governments are going to be implementing all sorts of repressive interpretations of these laws. And in fact, you know, we've just, we spoke about months ago, several weeks ago, about the example of the bar in Canberra that was
where it had pictures
on the wall, which basically depicted caricatures of Netanyahu, Putin, and a whole range of autocratic kind of and Trump,
sort of ridiculing them as war criminals,
ridiculing them as basically being equivalent to Nazis, which is very classic kind of satire kind of humor, People have every right to kind of make those kind of jokes, and it just represents that. Do we have this kind of question of like, does the notion of free speech even exist anymore in a country that claims to be a democracy, a country that claims that you have the right to say what you want, without being arrested? It appears that you don't necessarily have a right to say anything without fear of prosecution anymore, and particularly, and it is and it's starting off with the pro-Palestine people who are standing up opposing genocide.
It's shocking.
And I thought maybe we'll go play a quick announcement, and maybe I'll introduce a song that we play before we go on to our first interview. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM, and we'll be back shortly.
The media in this country, we as Indigenous people know, have censored our right of telling the truth, and the truth is what this country is most fearful of, in particular Indigenous truths. Until history is told by the vanquished lens, which is our people telling our story our way, and have the right to be able to incorporate that into a system of learning, well, people are always going to be denied that truth by deceit and lies. When you look at the type of psychological warfare and spiritual warfare that Aboriginal people are caught in, it's not just in the sense of military when they talk about weapons of mass destruction, but you're right, it's in terms of the media, and the industry of media is a warfare against our people, and so is religion, I believe, in the Western sense. They're all weapons of mass destruction against our people.
We need to keep radical voices on air. Subscribe now.
Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 9419 8377.
You're back, and you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and it's a short, and it's only 7:13 a.m. in the morning, and we'll probably shortly have our first live interview for the program, and we were just having a bit of a discussion about the new hate speech laws that are kind of being imposed in Queensland, including the banning of the phrase from the river to the sea. Now, so we'll go play a bit of a song before we go on to our first live interview. So I'm going to be playing Time Moves Slow, featuring Sam Herring, by Bad Bad Not Good, which is a kind of a bit of like an instrumental jazz hip-hop group. Hope listeners enjoy.
We'll be right back. I found you at the window again, looking out, watching the leaves falling in. Then you were something like a dream.
All right, you are just listening to Time Moves Slow by Bad Bad Not Good. All right, now we are very happy to be joined today by Abbas, who is a member of the Iranian diaspora and is based in Melbourne, and is also part of the Voices of Revolution Iran group based in Australia. So we have Abbas on to really much kind of unpack what's really kind of happening in Iran, especially since US and Israel launched its bombing campaign of Iran, basically dragging the world into a war. Good morning, Abbas.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. So Abbas, I guess I want to kind of start off by asking, I mean, what are your kind of comments on the US-Israel bombing of Iran? And What is its implications, I guess, for the current political situation as a result?
Look, the bombing by Israel and US on Iran, absolutely illegal, because they have been discussions regard some politics problem between them. But after that, any time they have a meeting to solve the problem, USA, they attack Iran. But look, to know the situation in Iran and the bombing on Iran, we have to know, we have to understand the forces they are in this war. As you know, this war not belong to the people. The war between the government, between USA, Israel, and Islamic Republic of Iran. And not in anything interest for the people. And the people in between this war, they are suffering. But you know, these forces, like Israel, the country, genocide, Palestinian, and attack Lebanon, he killed a lot of people, thousands and thousands and thousands. Nobody stopped them. USA, they support Israel. And they, in this genocide, they have a big share of this genocide. So both of them, they try to attack lots of countries before they attack Iraq, Libya, everywhere. They are looking for power. They are looking for oil. They are looking for dollars. But regarding the Islamic Republic, we know Israel and USA very well. We know they are imperialism. They want to attack, they want to kill, they want to get the power. But in Iran, if you know, from 47 years, the Islamic Republic all the time, they fed them and they say, we're going to get what Orjelin, we're going to win them, we're going to get them. They are belong to the Islam, and all the time, they happy to have a war and to get that places and belong part of their state. So if you look to the forces in this war, no one in the people side, all of them against the people. And now in Iran, it is, the situation is awful. Disaster. They bombing the people, USA and Israel, they bombing them, and the people, they have no shelter. They get killed. They kill the kids in the school. They bombing a lot of hospitals. Both of them, they are criminal.
Yeah. So, Abbas, that gets me into kind of, I think, the next kind of question and important kind of point of discussion, because, Abbas, we've known that, you know, as a socialist and a communist, you've been very much, you know, critical of the autocratic Islamic Republic kind of regime, you know, which, you know, actively kind of represses its population. And of course, you've also been, you know, part of supporting many of the kind of movements against the Iranian government, including the Women Life Freedom Movement, and also the kind of recent kind of movement that has sort of happened. And I guess I want to kind of get your comments, I guess, on why is it important for the left to kind of both oppose the autocratic regime in Iran and support people's struggles on the ground, but also oppose US imperialism and Israel, which are obviously doing nothing to advance the aspirations of ordinary Iranians.
Look, as you mentioned, 2 years ago, we had a big uprising in Iran, Women Life Freedom. And this uprising attacks on all regions, attacks on Iraq, attacks on Afghanistan, attacks there, and they start there. So this wave of the revolution of the uprising, women life freedom, affect on the other region, and they didn't want it. This movement will win, and we have in Iran a big, strong worker movement. In 1 year, more than 1,000 strike we had from oil workers, from metal, from everywhere. So we have a big movement in Iran. And Islamic Republic, they don't want this movement happen. They don't want this revolution to be happen. And USA and Israel, they want their interest. They don't want it, the government come in Iran. They support the people, the working class. Of course, the best thing for them to they wanted their puppet, like Pahlavi. They try to come to get Iran, attack Iran. They get the power and they bring somebody that listen to them, their puppet, and they put it on the government. In the government, these three, of course, when we chanting against the Israel, when we chanting against USA, we have to chanting against the Islamic Republic, because all this situation comes from the Islamic Republic. If we chanting against the Islamic Republic, we have to chanting against the USA and Israel, because all they are in one row. They are against the people. They are not supporting the people. You know, the Islamic Republic, when they got the power, 27 years, they ruled the people of Iran, workers, students, teachers, women, and other section of the society have risen up and revolted thousands of times. This revolution made by the people. They don't want it, this one. But when we talk about the Islamic Republic, and we don't want Islamic Republic, we want to have a revolution there, we have to chanting against the Israel and USA. They are in the same role.
So Abbas, I kind of want to go into kind of another kind of question, which is basically, I want to kind of hear some of your comments, I guess, on the kind of broader implications that this has for the kind of Middle East. And I guess in particular, what are your comments on the role that the Gulf states are playing in this whole war?
I didn't get the question.
The Gulf states like Qatar, Bahrain, and so on, in terms of this whole conflict.
Yeah, all these countries, the Gulf countries, they are allied with the USA. And USA government, they have a lot of army in these countries. And in the Islamic Republic, they bombing Iran from this country, from Bahrain, from Dubai. So Islamic Republic replied to them and they attack the area belong to the U.S. Army. But they don't want to attend the war. Now, they after the attack Iran, they attack them. They don't want to attend the war, and they told USA, we don't want to enter.
All right. Well, the next kind of question I want to have asked, Abbas, I think that's been very helpful, I think, because, I mean, just one comment I like to kind of add on to that is there is obviously a lot of hypocrisy from the kind of Western media about Iran's response to the attacks from the US and Israel, where, you know, essentially, you know, the US and Israel can get away with essentially bombing a school. Iran responds by, you know, attacking US bases in some of these Gulf state countries, and then essentially the response of the West is to basically act like what Iran has done is equivalent to what the US has done, which is, I think, you know, the US has bombed a school, and all the Australian government can say is, oh, well, you know, we don't think that's okay, but, you know, we support the Pentagon investigating themselves. And I think that just shows a lot of the hypocrisy from these Western kind of imperialist powers. But I guess speaking of hypocrisy, I want to kind of hear, because this has a lot of relevance for the Iranian community in Australia, what are your comments on the Albanese government's measures that will essentially block Iranians seeking asylum from coming to Australia? And of course, we know in the history of Australia's abhorrent refugee policy that many of the refugees that have been impacted have been Iranians themselves, who are very much left the country to escape the repression of the Islamic Republic.
Unfortunately, Australian government from years and years, they have very racist opinion to the asylum seekers. Because we have a lot of refugees here in Australia. I think I'm not sure exactly the figure, but I think more than 12,000 asylum seekers. After now, these people, 15 years they are living in Australia. 15 years they are working here. They have kids here. The kids, they go to the school, but still the Australian government, they didn't accept them as a refugee. They hold them. More than 12,000. Recently, Albanese, he entered the war against Iran. It is ridiculous. Not our war. Not the people war. What they have to enter this war. The people, they pay tax, they don't want to enter this war. But Albanese, he doesn't understand. He doesn't listen to the people. He goes on his way. At the beginning, if you remember, his government, they accept two governments for Israel and Palestine, and they support the Palestinian people. But after the Israel president, when he came to Australia, his opinions changed. And the first country sent, he said, I entered the war against Iran. And that's ridiculous. And the people not happy with Albanese, what he did. Why he has to enter this war? This war belong to Israel and America. Not belong to the people. But Albanese, he does his job.
And, so the next question I want to kind of ask, Abbas, is what can you tell us about the upcoming protest on Sunday and why it's important to attend this protest at 1 p.m. at the State Library?
Look, it's good. Any protest against the war, to stop the war, we support the protest against the war. But one big problem in this gathering sometimes, the Islamic people, the Islamic Republic people in Iran, they attend the protest and with the Islamic Republic flag and with the picture of the Supreme Leader. Of course, lots of people, they are not going to attend this protest when they raise their flag, and we are not going to stay side by side by Islamic Republic. we would like to have, we ask all the groups, all the political groups and the parties, the socialist groups, we ask them to have independent protest. In this case, lots of people they're going to attend. Lots of Iranians, when they see the Islamic flag or supreme leader photo, they are not enter the protest. But in totally, we support the protest against the war. Any protest held to stop the war, we support. We are not going to stand side by side of the Islamic Republic in the protest.
All right. Well, the last question, Abbas, is we'll probably finish up this interview now, and I think it's been a very informative kind of interview, and it's been great to kind of hear an Iranian kind of left perspective on what against the war in Iran. And I guess do you have any kind of final comments that you'd like to make?
The comments we ask the people, Australian people, to come to the protest to stop the war in pain, the people they suffering. We ask all the socialist group to have to attend this one, to be active, and we have to have a protest every week against the war.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Abbas. And we'll definitely encourage people to get to the protest this Sunday at 1 p.m. All the solidarity to you, Abbas, and the struggle in Iran.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Abbas.
Thank you.
All right, we're just speaking to Abbas, who is a member of the Iranian diaspora and part of Voices of Revolution in Iran. So we'll go play a quick few announcements. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
Well, if you listen to 3CR, clap your hands. If you listen to 3CR, clap your hands. If you listen to 3CR, let's show know where you are. If you listen to 3CR, clap your hands. If you listen to 3CR, clap your hands. If you listen to 3CR, clap your hands. Well, check out the happening vibe. They're gonna ring up and subscribe. If you listen to 3CR,
flap your ears.
What? Who the hell is that?
Flap your ears.
What are you talking about? I ain't no elephant. Get out of here. This is handmade radio.
Good morning. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And we're just speaking to Abbas from Voices of Revolution Iran, talking about, hearing a left-wing Iranian perspective on opposing the war in Iran. Now, we do have another interview scheduled soon, but before we go into it, I thought we'd actually take a bit of a breather with another song. So I thought we would play Billy Toppy by Men I Trust. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
Thank you. still, I can almost taste a smoky trail of myrrh.
You were just listening to Billy Toppy by Men I Trust.
That was a great tune.
So I'll go pass it on to Chloe to introduce our next live interview for the program.
Yeah, we're really happy to have Jackson Payne from Stop the Demo on the call with us this morning. Welcome to the show, Jackson.
Thank you, Chloe and Jacob, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and we're actually having Jackson on to update us on the campaign to oppose the destruction of the 44 public housing towers in Melbourne, in NUM. But Jackson, can we start off by please telling us about the Stop the Demo campaign?
Absolutely. So Stop the Demo is a coalition of workers from across the community sector. Primarily from housing and homelessness, but people who are frustrated by the inaction from their employers in the face of what is the biggest change to housing in Victoria since the same towers are built, so the demolition of the 44 public housing towers. So we've come together and we're trying to pressure our employers to do something about this, but in the process we've also linked up with various other organisations, including Honk for Housing, 44 Flats United, the Renters Union, Rahu, Flat Out, Socialist Alliance and Vic Socialists. So we've all come together recently to try and collaborate and to work together more, I suppose, acutely to try and stop this, especially in 2026, where we have a state election coming up. And we feel really strongly that this is a really good opportunity for us to bring this into the public's attention in a really direct way. So when they go to the ballot box in November, that this is going to be on the forefront of their minds, that this government is demolishing 10,000 homes at the peak of the worst housing crisis that the state has ever seen.
Well, we really appreciate your work, Jackson, in bringing all of these groups together. Can you give us a quick overview of the joint statement from Victoria's peak housing bodies regarding the demolition of Melbourne's 44 public housing towers? What does the joint statement mean? Why is it inadequate? And how have grassroots housing organisations collectively responded to this?
Such an important question. Thank you, Chloe. So in February, the Council to Homeless Persons, Elders Rights Australia, Housing for the Aged Action Group, Tenants Victoria, Victorian Council of Social Services, and the Victorian Public Tenants Association released a statement in response to the demolition. And the timing of the statement is quite significant because it was February this year. But, of course, Daniel Andrews announced the demolition of the towers back in September 2023. So 2.5 years after the announcement of the demolition, do these peak bodies of housing and homelessness and social services in the state decide to make any kind of public statement about this? Now, the public statement that they made did include some important things, for example, some individual separate support support for people who are being relocated, so outside of the support that Homes Victoria is providing. But significantly, they mentioned no alternative to demolition of these properties. In fact, the whole statement talks about demolition as if it's a fait accompli. So they offered no alternatives to the fact that there are examples in Europe where refurbishment has happened to a lesser social, environmental, and economic cost. And in fact, there have been studies released here in Australia, here in NAM even, from the not-for-profit agency, not-for-profit architecture agency office, and from RMIT University, that quite clearly state that refurbishment of most of these buildings is absolutely the best way forward, other than outside of what is happening at the moment, which is a demolition-first approach. So in response to this statement, this rather toothless statement from the peak bodies of housing and homelessness in Victoria, these organisations that I mentioned before, so Stop the Demo, Honk for Housing, 44 Flats United, Rahu, Flat Out Socialist Alliance, and the Victorian Socialists came together and thought, well, you know, in a sense, we're meeting regularly, we're talking to these issues from the grassroots level, and it's about time that we ourselves make a kind of statement in response to the peak bodies, and that's what we've done. So basically, we've called out the fact that, yes, well, the statement is good, they're talking about it, they're bringing it into the public's attention, but we need to ask for much more. And in fact, what we are asking of these peak bodies is merely to attend to the core business, which is to support unhoused people and people who are precariously housed in this state, not by saying, hey, let's demolish these houses, demolish these towers in the peak of an absolutely extraordinary housing crisis.
Jackson, you wrote a great piece in Mianjin titled A Crisis of Cruelty, and I encourage everyone to read it. It almost brought me to tears towards the end. You referred to the social, economic, and psychological cost to original communities who are displaced and relocated, and also the advantages to developers. And you've also highlighted the scary parallels between the demolition of public housing in the 1950s and the relationship between the Victorian government and private developers today, but also pointing out how things are actually getting worse and than they were in the maybe the 50s and 60s. And you mentioned something called the ground lease model, which I found interesting. Maybe you can tell listeners about this too. But my question is, how is the government able to get away with tearing public housing towers down in the middle of a housing crisis? How are they justifying it?
To their credit, they're doing an excellent job of branding this. So what they're doing is they're saying, well, we're going to be increasing social housing by 10% by 2050, which we know already is inadequate given the demand on social housing presently. But most people, when you talk to them who don't know this issue intimately, say, oh, it's great, you know, they're building more housing. Isn't that what we want? But when you dig into the details and look at the specifics of what's happening, they're not building more public housing. In fact, they're demolishing all of the public housing and they're replacing it with community housing. So social housing is kind of an umbrella term for both. And it's important to distinguish between these two because public housing is owned by the government. Rents are set at 25% of one's income. And to get public housing, you merely need to make a public housing application and wait for your application to come to the top of the waitlist. But for community housing, the process is slightly more complicated. And once you become a community housing tenant, the rents are a lot more expensive. So, for example, to get into community housing, you have to make a public housing application, the Victorian Housing Register application. And then in addition to that, you have to make a community housing application. And in doing so, you have to disclose things such as your mental health, your AOD use, any involvement you've had with the criminal justice system, all sorts of things that you would never otherwise have to tell your landlord. But if you are lucky enough to get a community housing tenancy, you then have to pay 30% of your income, not 25% like public housing. You have to pay 100% of your Commonwealth rent assistance. You have to pay service fees to the provider, so they're usually housing and homelessness organisations, ironically, who manage these community housing bills. And you have to pay utilities on top of that. And in addition, these tenancies are far less secure, and we know that because we see community housing tenancies before VCAT at astonishingly high rates compared to the number of possession orders we see at VCAT for people who are in public housing. So that's kind of how the Victorian government is getting away with this, because they're branding this as an increase in housing, where actually it's an incredible decrease in the exact type of housing we need, which is public housing. We know that the higher proportion of public housing in any market puts downward pressure on housing prices, because there's active competition with private enterprise, and that is to everyone's benefit. So although, yes, this might seem like an issue for folks who are living in the towers, actually public housing is an issue that affects everybody. We can look to places like Scandinavia, where they have extraordinarily high percentages of public housing that are of a really high quality, so therefore people really aspire to live in those properties, and in doing so there's active competition in the market and house prices are pushed downwards as a result. And we can also look at other examples. For example, in the United Kingdom, up until Thatcher, they nearly abolished private landlordism because public housing was so rife and so good, such a good quality, that they nearly ridded themselves of private landlords and this sort of perpetual increase in house prices as a result. But just to go back to your earlier question, or the earlier thing you mentioned, Chloe, is that the parallels between what's happening right now and what happened in the 1950s and 1960s are so incredibly similar. Like, I just can't believe that we're doing this all over again. So in the 1950s and 60s, we had a thing called the Slum Reclamation Project, where the Victorian Housing Commission, which we now call Homes Victoria, demolished housing on 1,000 hectares of inner-city Melbourne land to build the towers. But the way they assessed the slummishness of these properties was merely to drive down the street and decide whether they were slums or not. But despite the incredible social cost of evaporating or erasing these communities, what we did build in their place were the towers. So the towers kind of came to fruition through some very complex and perhaps unsatisfactory public policy, but the result was overwhelmingly positive in the end. But now we're demolishing these public housing properties, the result of a previous demolition campaign, and we're not replacing them with socially conscious housing. We're replacing it with private housing predominantly.
Yeah, the mass demolition of public housing towers impacts all of us, doesn't it? But especially the people being moved on. I'm going to read out one more sentence from your article, which critiques how people are considered eligible for public housing and the discrimination that you were mentioning, and even the compromising position support providers are put in. It just paints an absurd scenario that, and this is what you've said in your article, that forces organizations to evict its community housing tenants who then show up to the crisis services of those same organizations looking for support. So this is not housing allocated according to need. This is housing allocated by households competing in the market. But in this market, people must compete according to their income and support needs. I thought that was a really important part of your article. And I also just wanted to maybe get you to tell us a little bit more about the fight against public housing demolition and the 44 Flats United and how people can support them.
Yes, such an excellent opportunity to speak to this. Thank you, Chloe. Just to speak quickly to that little section in the piece that I wrote, it kind of came from the 10 years that I spent working in crisis housing services in Victoria, where we would see, for example, community housing, former community housing tenants from down the road, in this instance that I'm speaking to from a different community housing provider, be evicted and then show up to the crisis service that I was working for. So this has been happening for a long time, but what this means is that this is going to happen as we demolish public housing and replace it with community housing. It's going to happen at a greater frequency. We're going to see the fact that these people were being supported by one organisation, get housed by that organisation, get evicted by that organisation, and then somewhat absurdly turn up to the crisis services of that same organisation. So it just doesn't really make any sense. But to the most important thing that you mentioned is how can people get involved? And there are many, many ways that folks can get involved. So first and foremost, speaking on behalf of my organization, Stop the Demo, if you're a worker in the social and community services, be it, for example, a family violence service or a housing and homelessness service, or anything from within the social and community services, and you're pissed off that your employer isn't doing anything, well, Stop the Demo is the place for you. You can reach us at Stop the Demo on Instagram, or you can contact us at stopthedemogroup@gmail.com. But there's also lots of other ways that you can get involved. So 44 Flats United is doing a really great job of organizing tenants in the towers. So they're really trying to support them as these Homes Victoria workers come and say, hey, you need to move out of your home. Well, they're saying, well, there's other ways that we can go about this. So bringing them together in a really important way. The Renters Union Rahu are doing some excellent work as well. I meet with their new secretary, Adu, every month, and some of the actions that he's taking are just incredible. So he's been crashing our Housing Minister Harriet Shing's events and organising people to turn up and ask questions about public housing demolition. But there's also, for example, Honk for Housing. So they're outside the Flemington and North Melbourne towers every single morning, Monday to Friday, holding banners. So if you want, you can just turn up sometime between 7:30 and 9 p.m. and meet the excellent Sandra, who's coordinating that, and she'll put you down on a roster and you can hold some banners and get some honks for housing. And there's also Safe Public Housing Collective. They've been around for a long time and doing some excellent work in this space. And they're a kind of collective group of various left-leaning organisations and people who are interested in public housing demolition. And in fact, they also have a bunch of public tenants and they're doing some great work. So there's lots of ways that you can get involved. But if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me directly in the ways that I mentioned before, because we really would like to grow this campaign, especially as we move towards the November election, because we really want this on the forefront of people's minds when they go to vote.
It's been great having you on Green Left Radio this morning, Jackson, and thank you for all the important and urgent work you're doing, particularly the Stop the Demo campaign that you're organising. But we are coming to the end. We encourage people to get involved in the Stop the Demo campaign. And we know there's an event coming up called War or Public Housing, Resist the Push to Defund Essential Services on April 16th by the Save Public Housing Collective. But before we wrap up, Jackson, did you have any last comments you wanted to add?
I'd just like to reinforce the fact that public housing can seem like an issue only for public housing tenants or people who work in the housing sector. But to emphasise, this affects every single one of us. For those of you who, for example, are struggling with the cost of your rent, are sick of the high cost of living, all of this can be connected or drawn back to the cost of housing. And the way we can put downward pressure on housing prices and the cost of rent is to build more public housing. So get on board, get in touch and join the campaign.
Well said, Jackson. Thank you so much again for giving us your time this morning.
Thank you, Chloe and Jacob. I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, so we'll go. We're just speaking to Jackson from Stop the Demolitions, and I just got to make a few comments.
Stop the Demo.
Campaign. Stop the Demo. Just make a few comments. I mean, I think, you know, this is really one of the more important kind of campaigns coming in the lead up to the state election, and really it kind of represents. And as someone who was sort of involved in the first campaign against the destruction of public housing, well, it wasn't the first ever campaign, but it was really where a lot of this kind of privatisation started in 2017 with the Public Housing Renewal Program. It's very much very important that, you know, progressive and grassroots movements really put this whole question of public housing on the agenda, because what we're kind of seeing is very much the kind of destruction of public housing as a concept, being replaced with social housing or community housing. All right, I'm going to go play a quick few announcements. We'll go on to the Green Left Activist Calendar.
Forests are essential ecosystems, mitigating for climate breakdown, cooling the planet, and preserving the wondrous diversity of life. Yet, they are being destroyed at an alarming rate. Here in the Kulin Nations, logging continues, increasing risk of both fires and floods. The Bob Brown Foundation is calling a national day of action, the March in March for Forests. In Naam, join us on Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m. in Parliament Gardens to demand the protection for native forests. Go to marchforforests.org for all the details, including how to volunteer. March for Forests, Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m.
A 3CR supporter.
Welcome back. You're listening to Friday Breakfast, Green Left Radio on 3CR, and it's time for the Activist Calendar. Tomorrow, Saturday, March 14th, there's a workshop, Sink Orcas Before It Sinks, Australia, 1 p.m. at the MUA, 46 Island Street, West Melbourne. Then there's a speak out, Asian Migrant Sex Worker and Sex Worker Survivors of Violence Speak Out, 3 p.m. outside State Library. Sunday, March 15th, there's going to be a vigil, commemorate the 51 Muslim martyrs of the Christchurch massacre, 12 p.m. at the State Library. And then there's going to be a rally. I've got a frog in my throat. There's a rally, end the US-Israel war on the Middle East. That's going to be at 1 p.m. at the State Library.
All right, so I'll go into highlighting some more events that are going to be happening. There's one event that was actually I'll just quickly highlight it. Just one event that's sort of missing from the activist calendar, but I'm getting the details quickly. But there is going to be a West Papuan film screening happening on there's basically going to be a West Papuan film screening happening on Monday night. And you should be able to get the detail. Oh, yeah, here it is. So it's going to be a film screening organised by Melbourne Burgerkak Rack. And it's going to be happening at 6:30 p.m. at the G06 Theatre at Elizabeth Murdoch Building and University of Melbourne. So, yeah, definitely that'll be happening on Monday, the 16th of March. And now the other details to kind of events I want to kind of highlight is there'll be a protest against waste incineration moratorium and prohibition rally, and that'll be happening at 5 p.m. at the Parliament Steps on Wednesday, March 18th. Then on Thursday, March the 19th, there'll be the Melbourne premiere of Nagana Yarbin, known as the Water Protectors, at 6 p.m. at the Cinema Nova. Then on Thursday, March 19th, there'll be a book launch, System Change for a Liberal Future, at 6 p.m. at the Shreds Hall. And then on Saturday, March the 21st, there'll be a rally against racism, Scrap Trump's Labour Trump's style deportation laws, and that'll be happening at 2 p.m. at the State Library. Then there'll be a film screening, Free Kaneki Solidarity Naam, at 5 p.m. at the Docklands. Then on Sunday, March the 22nd, there'll be the Degrowth Festival at 11 a.m. at the Curtin Square. Then on, as we sort of announced earlier for an announcement, there'll be a rally, Prepare for the March in March for Forests, at 11 a.m. at the Parliament Gardens. And then at, then there'll be an interfaith holiday celebration organised by Hindus for Human Rights, Australia, New Zealand, Melbourne. That'll be happening from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Drill Hall. And then on Tuesday, March 24th, there'll be a public forum, Resisting Repression, Defending Palestine Solidarity, and they'll be happening at 6:30 p.m. at the State Library Theatre at 179 La Trobe Street in the city. We'll just kind of finish off there, but you can see a lot of these events all listed on the Green Left kind of activist calendar. All right, now I thought we'll take a bit of a break and actually play a bit of another song. So I was going to play Hurts to Love by Beach House. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
Looking out at the wide, wide world, it's a lot for the boys.
Okay, you're listening to Greenlit Radio, and you're just listening to Hurts to Love by Beach House. Now, we're getting into the last part of the program, and Salt would actually start by actually giving a few important news stories sort of highlighted. So there's a few issues I kind of want to talk about, and this is kind of like the issue of the government's new asylum seeker laws that are being implemented by or being proposed by the Albanese government. And Chloe will probably talk a bit more about it, but I just want to kind of start off by talking about, I guess, this whole issue of the Iranian women's football team. So there's a few things going on here. So basically, there were, I think, 5 or 6 members of the Iranian football team that refused to sing the national anthem of Iran. And as a kind of consequence... 7 members. And so as a consequence... you know, there is a lot of speculation about them potentially facing threats back home or facing repression, because I mean it's been obviously been interpreted as being in kind of defiance of the Iranian kind of government in a number of ways. So there's seven women who are potentially targets. But on the other hand, there's a few kind of complex issues, I think, happening here. And that is something I think that has to be sort of caught out, which is, I think you can say that the Albanese government is acting in a very opportunistic way, especially in the context of the fact that the Australian government is involved in a war against Iran and is sending military support and is trying to build kind of consent for military attacks against Iran. Now, the thing is, they have promised that they'll be granting asylum to these women. And you know, that's kind of like really, you know, in the context, you know, given the fact that the Australian government, you know, given the whole track record of how the Australian government has treated refugees, especially how it's treated Iranian refugees who have sought asylum in the past 10 to 15 years, you know, it's hard not to feel cynical about their kind of promises of asylum. And really, it is a really conscious attempt by the Albanese government to, you know, essentially play politics and to actually, you know, to kind of try and demonstrate that, oh, look, you know, we're actually the good guys, you know, look, we're granting asylum to these women, etc. Then, of course, it's also not 100% confirmed, you know. Obviously, that said, I don't want to downplay the repression of the Islamic Republic regime. You know, it does obviously play a very repressive role, but also politically, I mean, looking at this sort of rationally, they have stated that, you know, It is quite unclear whether they would face repression back home, whether the Iranian government would even go ahead with that, because obviously everything's in the spotlight right now, etc. It's under immense kind of threat. And so that's why you would probably imagine that there's one Iranian football team member who has changed her mind and is planning to potentially go back to her home country. So I think, yeah, I think that what the government is doing is quite a cynical kind of maneuver. Now, that said, I mean, I think, you know, it's a positive thing that they are granting asylum to these women, especially if they want to go ahead with seeking asylum and not face repression back home. But at the same time, I think we have to criticize what the government is doing, you know, for their kind of general hypocrisy, given their involvement in the war against Iran and how they're deliberately undermining the sovereignty of Iran.
Yeah, and the same day, Labour offered asylum to the Iranian women's soccer team who were in Australia competing in the Women's Asian Cup. The same day they offered them asylum, they have introduced a new bill that undermines the refugee program. And if you have a look at this bill, Labour has sunk to a new low with this new racist bill, an anti-asylum bill. It's cruelty. The Australian government, they like to put out statements, like you were saying, Jacob, the hypocrisy, is shocking. They like to put out statements saying they care about people, the people of Iran, but they are actively participating in this war. And then when people become refugees, the Australian government tighten their borders to justify the war. And if this bill gets passed, there will be three people who get to pick and choose who is worthy of protection. The Home Affairs Minister, the Foreign Affairs Minister, and the Prime Minister. And just reading from this Green Left article, it's stating what the Refugee Council of Australia CEO Paul Power has said about it, saying it amends the Migration Act 1958. It seriously undermines the country's commitment to the 1951 Refugee Convention. He said people who have already been fully screened can be prevented from entering Australia. People who have visas already. Power said the Refugee Convention, drafted 75 years ago, including by Australia, was aimed at preventing a repeat of when, in the 1930s, governments like Australia closed their doors to Jewish refugees trying to leave Nazi-controlled Germany. So this is, you know, just things are getting even worse for refugees, and more wars are creating more refugees. We definitely need to put the pressure on, stand with refugees, and make sure this bill does not become law.
Yeah, and I guess I want to kind of add on a bit as well, because I want to talk a bit more about, you know, Australia's participation in this illegal United States-Israel war on Iran.
Mm.
Now, you know, since initiating their joint war on February 28th, you know, the US and Israel has committed a crime of launching essentially a war of aggression. They've attacked civilian populations and assassinated political and military leaders of a sovereign nation. Now, you could just imagine if Iran committed similar acts against Israel and the US, how, you know, they would act like it would be the worst possible thing that could happen, and, you know, it would essentially serve as kind of justification for outright war. But really, what's happening right now is we're seeing a war of outright aggression, because really the aggressive party in this instance is the US and Israel. And at the same time, the Albanese government is coming out in full support of this, you know, giving tactical justification for this war of aggression against Iran. And worse, it's openly participating in it. Through the Labor government has committed on March 10th to sending military assistance, and this includes 85 military personnel, an E-78 wedge-tail aircraft, and medium-range air-to-air missiles. And of course, these are all being given to the Gulf states for collective self-defense against Iranian missile and drone attacks. And yet, at this point, I mean, the Iranian government, you know, the Iranian government, as Abbas sort of highlighted in an interview, has really only attacked US military bases in the Gulf states. Yet the media is trying to mislead us by saying, oh, yes, look, you know, Iran is launching these attacks all over these Gulf states, yet no civilian targets have been targeted. Chloe,
yeah, the Australian government just loves to suck up to Trump in order to keep their AUKUS submarine deal so we can go to war with China one day. And now look at what is happening. And Australian personnel were on board an American nuclear-powered submarine when it sank an Iranian warship. The Australian government are just really happy to go to war. We instead demand an end to the attacks on Iran. At least 1,255 people, probably been more now, have been killed in the US-Israeli war on Iran. I think it's entered its 13th day now. And there's been devastating airstrikes on the capital, Tehran, and other cities, as well as a lot of many civilian sites and schools and key infrastructure. But the Palestine movement has been demanding for years that the Australian government cut all military and intelligence ties with Israel and Israeli weapons manufacturers and impose sanctions on the Israeli state. And we're also demanding the withdrawal from the US-led AUKUS, ANZUS and Quad military alliances. But also another thing we need to be demanding is the signing of the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons. It's a moral disgrace and hypocritical that Australia has not signed this, especially when it's supporting a war on Iran, claiming that Iran has nuclear capabilities and is a threat to the world. Why has Australia, I mean, this is at the same time that Australia really wants to spend $368 billion on nuclear submarines. So this hypocrisy is maddening. Iran has no nuclear weapons and it is a signatory to the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons and has allowed inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency. Israel, by contrast, is known to have nuclear warheads and they have not signed the treaty and they don't allow these independent inspections. So impunity is just given to Israel to break all of these international laws and commit genocide. So we're, you know, we want people to actively come to the protests. There's one coming up this Sunday, March 15th, opposing the attacks on Iran and opposing the genocide in Gaza. And that again is outside the State Library, 1 p.m. We just have to force, the government will only be forced by the weight of public opinion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think then that's they'll just reiterate the importance of attending the protests at 1 p.m. At the State Library this Sunday. I think we need to build the biggest possible, broadest opposition to this war drive that the Albanese government is supporting. Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to go play a quick announcement and we'll go on to maybe one last news story before we finish up the program.
Being a 3CR subscriber is vitally important to keeping us community controlled, grassroots and on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Every 3CR show is a progressive voice that enriches and informs our communities.
From gardening and music to current affairs and First Nations voices, we broadcast expert community knowledge, offering perspectives beyond the mainstream media.
Subscribe today to be part of community-owned and community-controlled media.
Show your solidarity. Subscribe.
Go to 3cr.org.au or call 9419 8377.
All right. Okay, you're back on Green Left Radio. And yeah, we're getting to the kind of end of the program, but I'd like to make a plug for a few things. So currently, 3CR is actually going through a subscriber drive right now. And subscribing to 3CR is really one of the most important ways that you can support community radio like 3CR. You know, to be able to maintain a community radio station that's independent of corporate media and in some ways able to preserve its integrity, you know, it's very important that we rely on the rely very heavily on the financial support of our listeners. And one of the ways that you can financially support 3CR is through becoming a subscriber. So becoming a subscriber can cost as low as $40 a year or $80 waged. It could also cost up to $150 or $300 for solidarity subscription. So yeah, you can become a subscriber by going on the website at 3cr.org.au. You can even call at 9419 8377 during business hours, but I would recommend calling that number from 9 a.m. To 5 p.m. when 3CR will be staffed by volunteers. But yeah, I mean, Chloe, do you have anything to add on why you should subscribe to 3CR?
By subscribing to 3CR, you're helping us to produce over 100 local shows each week and train and support new volunteers and broadcasters and maintain our transmission technology. And 3CR is not controlled by a corporation or a business. It's the community. It's us. It's me and you that own it. And we want to keep it independent. We provide a voice for lots of unheard and underrepresented artists and organizations. And we've been doing this since 1976. Listener support is so important. It's what's helped us keep on the air, us on the air for that long. It's 50 years this year. So yeah, please subscribe today and help us stay on the air.
Okay, so maybe we can go play one last song before wrapping up the program. I thought we'd play Year the Rat by Mudrat, which he was a musician. He's actually been a regular guest on Green Left Radio. And I also had the experience of seeing him live recently in Brunswick as part of the Brunswick Music Festival. So yeah, hope listeners enjoy.
Yeah. Centrelink, single mother checks, kept the rent paid. Need a health check, that's a check within a check, mate. My neighbor's mum never checked on a kid. Saw my first at the five when he burnt to a crisp. Guess the heroin was lit. I never learned to fib, for the truth of the matter wasn't everything I lived. The 8-1 was my checkoff's gun. Check the check, yet I'm blessed with the debt I shun. I am the voice of the world's worst choices, the son of an abuser. My blood is full of poison, with skin so thick, it's no wonder I'm avoided. Born in the mud, now my mind forever soiled it. Took every bruise, every cut, every noose that I lined to my neck, but I tied it to you. Fuck this world, I'ma die in the stoop, but not before your motherfuckers ride to my tombs like. I came, made a pact, to turn my pain to a blade of jack. New boys coming 10 for 10, yet every damn year is the year of the rat. Hearing the punks dead and dust dead, lost to the woke mob who maimed and gushed dead. What's punk? Sheep punch, too scared to be fun. Punch down, fuck around and dare to be blunt. Nah, most of you radicals have never been poor. If your parents aren't a home and you're always insured, I can never be a hypocrite or meddle in thought. I'd rather care about nothing and settle in court. I hate virtue signalers who think they're better than me. You couldn't give a fuck and deserve social standing. Maybe it's the fact that I'm terrified to act, but for now it's fuck the world, I will never double back. Like made a pact to turn my pain to a blade of jack. New boys coming 10 for 10. Yet every damn year is the year of the rat. Lace on jaded soul. These boots are talking and walking tall. New code, we ain't giving them back. Every damn year is the year of the rat. Yeah. Or maybe it's the fact that I'm terrified to act. Terrified to peel the bandages I had to wrap. Never had a guiding hand, I've only known to slap. Once bitten, twice shy, simple math is that. Or maybe it's the fact that I have to double back. Whenever I see a child without the love I never had. Suddenly I see a crack, a ray of light in the black. My tongue, no love was digging, now my vision is intact. I am the voice of the world's worst choices, but now I lead a choir, a blood is full of poison. The same scars that led me on a path of avoidance, and now the mark of a better arc, we anointed. I came, made a pact, to turn my pain to a blade of jack. New boys coming 10 for 10, yet every damn year is the year of the rat. Lace on, jaded soul, these boots are talking and walking tall. New code, we ain't giving them back. Every damn year is the year of the rat.
All right. You're just listening to Year of the Rat by Mudrat. So, yeah, we have 2 minutes left on the program. And so I just guess what I want to finish off by thanking all our listeners for tuning in this week. We'll upload this episode as a podcast on the website at freecr.org.au. So you can listen back to the program. Yeah, thank all our guests. I also just want to make a plug that, you know, if you support the work that Green Left Radio does in bringing you... you know, bringing you the stories that you don't often hear, that you do not hear in the mainstream, you could consider becoming a supporter of Green Left, and you can become a financial supporter of Green Left by going on greenleft.org.au/support. So yeah, I'd like to thank our listeners again.
And I just want to also again thank our guests, Abbas Saidavi, member of the Iranian diaspora and part of Voices of Revolution Iran, and Jackson Payne from Stop the Demo. Those are the two interviews we had today if you wanted to go back and listen to them. I think, yeah, this is the end of the show. So we hope listeners enjoyed, and yeah, meet you back here same time, same place next week. Stay tuned for Left After Breakfast. Have a good Friday.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at greenleft.org.au/support or free call 1-800-634-206.
Arise, you workers from your slumbers. Arise, you prisoners of want. For reason in revolt now thunders, and at last ends the age of Khan. Away with all your superstitions. Serve all masses.
Arise.
We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. That's right, the commies are back. Reds underneath your beds in that crack.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.